This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Grief is something that many, if not all of us, would like to avoid but likely have experienced or will experience at some point in our lives. Now, the COVID-19 pandemic has resulted in a surge of people all around the world unexpectedly grieving for the loss of their loved ones due to the disease. Worldwide, more than 3.5 million deaths have occurred due to COVID-19, and here in Malaysia, more than 2,000 deaths, and this is the number that likely will continue to rise. But we mustn't forget that these aren't just numbers. Behind every number is a human being, and that person leaves behind family and friends who grieve over their passing. So now the question is, are we doing enough to help people understand what they're feeling? Is there a grief crisis looming over us? So joining me to unpack today's rather heavy topic is Associate Professor Dr. Anasuya Jagate Vijayakathesan, a licensed and registered counsellor. Welcome to the show, Dr. Anasuya. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess to start, right, let's go right to the basics. You know, what do we mean by grief and what are the emotions that are associated with grief?
Grief in itself is an emotion. It's basically sadness, but it's, and it's prolonged and it can be very deep. Usually when we have grief, we feel a sense of loss. There's something missing in our lives. We feel that we're not complete, like a part of us have been removed or taken away. That is one of the experiences of grief. You have got normal grief, which is what I said just now, and then you've got complicated grief. Complicated grief is when we feel grief, that we're grieving over the loss of something, but at the same time, we are also, we have got multiple losses. That means we have got, maybe a few people have passed away, you know, in a very close span of time. Or you can have a situation where you are grieving over something, but you're also feeling guilty because you couldn't visit them, you couldn't see them, you couldn't go to the funeral. Now, this is one of the issues of COVID. Because of COVID and the situations of COVID where we haven't been able to see loved ones, sometimes, you know, for some people, it's been 2 years and they can't visit. And then, you know, somebody is sick and they're in hospital and, you know, we can't even see them in hospital. So what we get then is a feeling of grief plus guilt. And this can go down the line of complicated grief, which can be very hard for a person to come out of or to recover from.
So then that means grief can come in different forms, right? It's not simply just one way of grieving.
The experience of grief is the sense of loss. And then the experience of grief itself, like I said, it can go from what we would consider as practitioners, we'd consider to be grief that is natural coming from, you know, a singular death, a loss, you know, certain events in our lives. And then you've got complicated grief, which, like I mentioned, is the more complex forms of grief, which is, I mean, in a simple terms, I call it grief plus two more deaths, grief plus guilt, grief plus this. So that is the nature of grief in itself. But you asked your question was the form of grieving. Now, this one is where families, friends, close, you know, people who are close to each other can get things very confused. We have this little bit of an egoistical notion that says how I grieve is how everybody else must grieve. I am the one who's crying. That means my loss is more greater or somehow or another, you know, worse than somebody else's loss because they are not crying. But you see, there are different ways people experience grief. So one individual may experience grief through crying. Another individual may internalize the grief, and their grief can be just as heavy, just as painful, sometimes even more painful. But they can't cry. Because for them, the crying is not what they can express at that time in order to express their grief. So their grief may be expressed through the need to do stuff. They can be stressed out. They can be very, I don't want to think about it. You know, it's not something I just want to do. I don't want to think. The grief can express itself in many different ways. And if we come in with an understanding that, look, we are all grieving, but how we grieve differently. You may cry. I may need a distraction. Some people may actually try to go and be around kids so they can laugh mm-hmm. instead of cry. So people will choose to do different things. But everybody is grieving. It's just that they are grieving in different ways and different methods. And if we come in with compassion and we know that somebody has got a loss, and we just accept that however they choose to express their grief is an expression of grief in itself. And we try not to judge based on our standards of what grief is supposed to look like.
I think what I'm understanding from you, you know, it's important to acknowledge that it's different for every person. And for someone who's looking at it perhaps from the outside, you know, it's not our place to judge or to decide how that individual should be grieving.
Yes. And some families do it quite a bit, unfortunately, because when you're grieving, then you're looking for a reason to get angry.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking for a reason, for a way to vent your, you know, stuck emotions. So in sometimes after funerals, you know, you find that people are fighting more and people are going down the line of, you know, being a bit more not working together with each other, because I'm grieving and then I see the way you are grieving does not seem to me, you know, be based on my standards to be the correct way of grieving. So I get angry. I get angry at how you are expressing your grief. I get upset that you're not as upset as I am. And then, you know, what is actually a shared loss becomes a huge fight, an unnecessary fight, because we're coming in with that approach of there is only one way of doing things in this world. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, coming with compassion, and compassion always says that there's more than one way of managing. There's more than one way of expressing. There's more than one way of loving. So if we come in with those types of attitudes, then, you know, we have shared grief, and shared grief is reduced.
Hmm. You know, from the individual's perspective, right, why is it important for them to acknowledge that, you know, they are grieving?
Because if not, you keep it inside. If not, it's stuck.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how much you may get angry with third party, no matter how much you may cry, but if you're not acknowledging the grief, if you're crying because you say, oh no, I'm not grieving, I'm angry. And this one, I'm speaking from personal experience on this one.
Mm-hmm.
This was when my mom's death, you know, I used anger to cover the grief. When my mom died when I was 22. So I was very angry for about, you know, for more than a year, you know, and I was like, because there were so many things to do when your mother dies, when you're quite young, you got a younger brother, younger sister. There were so many things to manage and to do and to take care of that I felt I had no time to grieve, that I couldn't show my grief because then my younger brother or sister would be upset.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I hid it with anger. And I can still remember that for years after until I actually went for counseling and I got counseling for it, I used to get very angry and talk about the death. When I talked about my mom's death, it was always with anger. And the tears used to feel like acid. It was hot. It was not comforting. So I never expressed the grief. I expressed anger. So the grief was inside me and it was stuck. And it took me quite a long time with help from counselors to actually be able to express the grief and then channel it into a way that at the end of the day, it's more helpful to the rest of the world than harmful, because my anger was harmful. And it took me a while to realize that. So that's why it's important. It's important because grief is not going to go away. It has to be managed. And when people die, if you learn, if you manage your grief well, and this is about Asian cultures, and I've done research on Asian cultures, and I really say this for Asian cultures, we honor our death. We honor those who've died. We have yearly prayers. We have yearly, I hesitate to use the word celebration, but we have days where we celebrate the memory of the people who died. That is honoring the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have, you know, when we grieve and when we remember people and when we remember them, you know, and we remember the impact that they have, the importance that they have in our lives, and we give honor and respect to that, to the grief, that I'm sad because, you know, you were so important. I'm sad because, you know, you're not here anymore. There's nothing I can do about your non-presence in my life, but I am so grateful for the amount of time I had with you and for what you did in that amount of time for me. This is part of our heritage and culture that we've had for many, many you know, generations. And it is so important because it really helps us manage long-term grief as we remember people with respect, as we remember people with honor. And for ourselves, the place where we put that person inside ourselves, the place where we have this continuing bond of respect with those who have died. We have a continuing bond of love with people who have, you know, gone before us.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, and it is quite important in terms of managing grief and quite important for ourselves so that we feel that when we move forward, you know, they have this wonderful place inside us that is full of love and not full of loss, fear, anger, and all kinds of other things. So that's why it's important.
You know, you brought up our culture, right, where we often, you know, have funerary rites that we go through, you know, depending on our religion or our beliefs when a loved one dies. But if we look at the COVID-19 pandemic, unfortunately, you know, we saw so many people who weren't even able to see their loved ones for a last time or to hold, you know, proper funerary rites as they would usually do pre-COVID. How does that affect, you know, their grieving process?
That is actually a very big, very, very bad, very big kind of impact on human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a grand aunt who passed away during this period in the first MCO. And we kind of watched it via online. We kind of watched the funeral because you can't even, like seven people. And I can still remember feeling this woman deserved more people being there. She deserved the presence of the family. She contributed so much. She did so much when she was alive. And now to have the funeral with so few people there, with people not seeing her, you know, it felt so wrong and it felt so bad. But it is part of that situation. So I have to process that and say that I cannot be there physically. So now my presence has to be there in terms of, in terms of emotion, in terms of psychically, in terms of support. So what I did for myself was, I did extra prayers in the home for her, and that, I watched the video, I watched the funeral. So, you know, in that way, you're with them in terms of time. So giving the same amount of time to those individuals. I think it is very important if for you, you feel that you are missing the funeral, you're missing that person, you need to do your rituals to help you, you know, to be part of it, even though you're physically not there. Because that's a wonderful thing about being a human being, because our brains are so complex. When we are physically not at a site, by doing things or conducting rituals that are, you know, that are linked to that event, we can actually connect with that. We can connect with it. We can watch video. We can watch online shows and connect with it. So this is what I'd encourage people to do. I'd encourage people to find the rituals that have meaning to them, and do it on your own terms. So you don't have to. I mean, you may not be able to go to across the sea to visit them, but you can do a similar prayer here for them. You know, and use, you know, do memorials. If you're not the kind who wants to do a prayer, okay, that's fine. Do something for the living. Do a website a diary kind of thing or a picture book kind of thing for the living, so that, you know, the memory is continued. Or you know, nowadays you can go and dedicate benches in a park, something like that. Dedicate something to the individuals who've passed on. So the memory, you know, the honoring of that memory is there. And I do think it's important. I think it is necessary. And I think that for most of us, I mean, there may be some, for some individuals who really don't feel anything. I'm like, no, okay, I don't have to be there. I say a prayer and it's done. I'm okay with it. Then if you are that kind of person, absolutely fine. That's another way of grieving. That's fine. But if you are a little bit more, you know, where you feel that connection from the rituals, you feel a connection from prayer, you feel a connection from being with family, then these rituals have meaning and they have importance. And I would totally encourage people to find methods which would help them conduct the rituals, so in their hearts and in their head, they feel that they have done and they've been part of this individual's journey to the beyond.
Mm. You know, just like you said, there is no one standard way that people are experiencing grief. And so the same goes for how people cope with the grief, right? There's no one standard way of doing things and, you know, coping with those feelings that come with grief. All right, we'll go off for a very quick break. I'm speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Anasuya Jagatevijagatesan, who is a licensed and registered counsellor. Our topic for today is grief and how people are coping with feelings of grief and why it's important for people who are grieving to acknowledge it. We'll come back to continue our conversation after a few quick messages. Don't go anywhere. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. Joining me on Zoom today is Dr. Anasuya Jagatevijagatesan. She's a licensed and registered counsellor as well as an associate professor in the psychology department at a private university. And today we are talking about grief. It's something that many of us would probably rather not talk about, would rather not discuss, but it is something that sort of has emerged to the forefront as, you know, discussions of death has been so prominent during the COVID-19 pandemic. And before the break, Dr. Anasuya was sharing about how people experience grief in different ways, and so people also manage grief in different ways. Now, this is something that I've seen pop up a lot of times, Dr. Anasuya. Is there a normal or healthy time, length of time to grieve?
Okay, I'm going to actually take some time here to explain some of the processes that people feel in grief.
Mm-hmm.
Now, firstly, I want to say that there's no stages. There are no stages where suddenly I go through this process and I'm fine. There's no such thing. That narrative, it's a very convenient narrative, but it's not a true narrative of how people experience grief. Not in my experience anyway. So that's my opinion. You can have different opinions. There are different theoretical opinions, but that's fine. But I'm of the opinion that the theory about stages is a kind of redundant theory because there's not enough proof that evidence that actually shows that it's true. Instead, what we have is something that's called it's called the dual process model, where we process the normal stuff. We process day to day work and items. And when we're focusing on our normal stuff, we can put aside our grief. Then we go into the grief processing, and grief processing can be overwhelming. So when we start grieving, then we almost stop everything else. So let me give you an example. So for an individual who is a spouse or partner or somebody has passed away, so you've done your time off work and then you go back to work, and you find that at work you're fine, you're focused, you're there, you do your work, and then the minute you finish and you step into your car, you break down, and you're like, oh my God, I can't stop crying. Am I over this? No, you're not. It's okay. That's normal, because when we need to focus, and this doesn't have to be, you know, even after a process, it can be even during the funeral, during some people who are parents, you have got children to look after, you've got other things to do. When you're looking after those people, when you're engaged in activities that you have to do, you put your grief on the back burner. But the minute those activities are over, and then you might be thinking, oh, I'm over the grief. No. The grief is there. The minute the activities are over and you have to, you know, and you have that space, then the grief starts coming out. And you will suddenly feel like you're grieving. And then it doesn't matter when the person actually passed away. The longer the period between when you experience that grief, you know, when the grief, the feelings of grief comes back, the time is irrelevant because the person has passed away and the person is no longer in your life. The amount of time you feel that grief for, or you experience the grief, gets shorter and shorter. Like closer to the funeral, you know, you'd have experience, when you feel the grief experience, it can last for hours. But as time goes on, then maybe it will last for, you know, 10 minutes, you know, goes to an hour, then 10 minutes. And, you know, you have that 10 minutes where you're feeling really sad. And then you think that, oh, you know, the funeral was my mom, my brother, my father, my partner passed away 3 years ago. Why am I suddenly feeling so bad?
Mm-hmm.
You are suddenly feeling so bad because that person was meaningful to you, had a wonderful place in your life, and now they are no longer there. And no matter the time in between, it doesn't change the fact that that person is no longer in your life. And when you remember that, you remember how important that person was, and you feel what is technically known as a sudden temporary upsurge of grief. And the upsurge of grief that you feel is irrelevant to the amount of time in between. Because, and you know, for some people, it, except for it reduces the amount of time that the sudden temporary upsurge of grief is felt for. I hope I'm making sense over the radio. I can do this a bit better with PowerPoints to explain the process. But basically, it's why, you know, 20 years after a parent passes away, 30 years after a child passes away, when you remember that child, it feels like yesterday. Mm-hmm. It feels like, you know, they just died. And the grief is sharp. But then it goes. And that is a normal process of grief. That, you know, when we remember the person, we will feel pain over their passing. But the amount, the period that we are feeling that pain for gets easier to manage and it gets shorter. And when we can expect it, we can make something beautiful out of it. A lot of people use that time to write poetry, to do art, to just sit down and look at the sun and remember them. And, you know, to give them that few minutes of respect, and then it goes. So usually, according to culture, they have this idea of 1 year. So within that 1 year period of grief, people are very forgiving of whatever happens, because, you know, you expect that people will grieve for a year. That is culturally bound. Now, individuals may, some people will just take a few months. Mm-hmm. Some people will take 2 or 3 years to get to where, you know, other people will go, you know, 1 year. There's no fixed schedule, but there's an ability to understand what you need to do, how much you need to manage. When does it become a problem? This is actually a more important question. When do I know that my grief is too much? Mm-hmm. It's overwhelming. It's not functional. It's no longer normal grief. You know, something else is going on. When you are not functioning. The grief which I mentioned just now, you have these moments of grief. You know, it lasts for half an hour. It lasts for 10 minutes. You are functioning after the 10 minutes. You can get back to that functioning where you focus on work, you focus on other things. Grief becomes a situation where it is more abnormal and you will need support when that process of you doing your normal day-to-day work, that part is not there. So you are not able to look after your kids. You are not able to do your work. You are not able to do other things because the thoughts are intruding at that point. So now it's the two processes of grieving and on daily functioning have kind of merged. Now, if that merging is more than the first few months, even more than just 3-4 months, and you're not able to function in daily life, that's when you need help. So it's not about how sad you're feeling or how much you're grieving. It's about whether in that grief you are able to function and do what you need to do to take care of yourself and your loved ones. And if the answer is, look, I'm grieving when I'm grieving because I miss this person, I love the person, and it's not affecting, you know, how I do my work, it's not affecting the rest of my family, I just need to grieve because I miss this person, then nobody should be telling you that you know, you should be over it. And the people who are telling you that you should be over it have got no idea what grief actually means. Mm-hmm. So the main thing is, if somebody is functioning, do not assume that you know what they should be doing.
And if that comes to the point where it's affecting your ability to function, is that when you should seek professional help?
Definitely. You come and see counselors at the point where the grieving is interfering with your functioning. Because the people who love us when they pass away, they want us to, you know, to be good. They want us to continue. They want us to grow. They want us to remember, you know, and to be functional. They don't want us to break down and not be able. No, that's not what love is. You know, they want you to be good. And when we think of it in that way, then, you know, part of us getting better is part of that love as well. It's remembering that they loved us enough to want us to be healthy. They loved us enough to want us to be successful. So if that is the love that they have, and, you know, you're recovering from that grief, your ability to function, your ability to continue with life is also part of their memory. Mm. It is also part of that respect for their love, the honor of their love, the fact that we continue their legacy. That's all part of it.
how important is it for people to talk about what they are feeling with their loved ones around them, or perhaps with a support group? You know, how is that important?
It depends on individuals. Some people find comfort in silence. Some people find comfort in words. This is, again, you know, it all depends on that individual, of how they find comfort in. The hard ones, when you need a support group, is when you are usually the one that supports everybody. You are usually the one that everybody counts on to be strong, that mm-hmm. everybody is telling, oh, you have to be strong, you have to do this. Oh my God, when people do that to you, then you know that you can't talk to your family, because they can't take your grief. They can't bear on top of their grief to see you in grief, because you are the leader, or you are the go-to person. So at that point, the go-to person needs to get a support group that is outside of their family and outside sometimes even of their friend circle, because they play the same role in the friend circle, and get help on the outside so that they can just express what they need to express. Because being the go-to person, being the one in charge, is, you know, has got layers and layers and layers of responsibility, where you push back your grief and you push back your grief until it explodes. So it's better to get the support that you need so you don't have to explode.
And, you know, looking at the situation right now, if we look at the COVID-19 situation, I can't help but think of our healthcare workers who are faced with difficult decisions every day, who are faced with their patients unfortunately passing away because of the disease. And, you know, how is this affecting people who are sort of facing death on a daily basis, especially in circumstances that are as difficult as we see now?
Okay. I can't speak for everybody, but I can say this one thing, because again, this is difficult for everybody on different levels.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in a hospital, it doesn't matter whether if your job is in a hospital, it doesn't matter whether it's COVID or non-COVID. People die all the time according to what kind of work you do. If you're a nurse in a hospital, you see death every day, whether it's COVID or whether it's not COVID, you would be experiencing death, except that now during COVID, you're experiencing death with maybe a lack of support on your side. But last time when people die, you can go home, everybody supports you, everybody's there for you. One of the hardest things, you know, in my opinion, and again, it's just my opinion, I may be wrong, one of the hardest things I've seen some of the health, frontliners I know, is the amount of prejudice they experience when they come home. I know a healthcare worker who was actually asked by the landlord to leave, because they were scared that they would spread COVID to everybody else from their unit. So our frontliners are being, you know, heroes. But then when people are scared and people don't understand that, because they're frontliners and they're heroes, they've actually taken a lot more precautions to make sure that when they leave the hospitals, they're not going to give their sickness to anybody. And if we don't understand that, and then we're going like, oh, they are nurses, they go in the hospital every day, they're doctors, you know, what if I get sick from them? Then that's not helpful at all. And of course, you know, they themselves are cut off from their families. They themselves are cut off from their support systems.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I may be wrong, again, I'm not 100%, I can't speak for everybody, but the few that I have actually had long chats with, the hardest thing for them was facing the prejudice, especially initially during the first MCO. And then after that, it has also been the fact that the people that they can go to and to talk it out with, you know, those support systems have been eroded because of it. They can't physically go over and hang out with their mothers. They can't physically go over and hang out with, you know, people who used to help them manage their own pain and their own issues. So their situation is different, not because that they're facing death, because I think a lot of them face death every day, regardless of whether it's COVID or not COVID, there's something else which they face death for.
Mm.
But the reaction of people outside, their life, the life situation, that's where the pain comes in.
If I take a step back and look at us as a collective society, right, is it possible that we're also, is it possible that we feel a sense of collective grief for all the people that For all the people that we are also losing to COVID-19 on a daily basis, right? Because, you know, for me personally, as someone who, by the nature of my job, I am constantly following the daily COVID-19 updates, you know, every time I see our death toll go up, you know, we have seen, you know, 60, 70 people passing away every day, you know, it fills me with such a great sense of sadness and loss every time I see it. But is that, If people are feeling that way, is that grief, even if we don't know those individuals?
Yeah, that's grief. That's collective grief. I mean, when MH370 happened, the whole nation grieved. We don't have to know people directly to grieve. We just have to empathize with the loss. And I think a lot of human beings are empathizing with, you know, others and what is going on. And when we empathize, we stand in somebody else's shoes. So when we're looking at numbers and we hear stories of, you know, what people have gone through during this COVID period, I mean, we grieve. We may not know their faces. We may not know their names. We may not even know what they look like. But we know they're human. And we know sort of what we would feel if we experienced that loss. And because when we look at it, we empathize, and when you empathize, you stand in somebody's shoes. And when you stand in that person's shoes, you feel echoes of what they feel. And that is grieving. Hmm. So yeah, because we are human, and that's one of the more, I mean, some people may look at it as, oh, we are traumatizing the universe, but it's actually, to me, one of the more beautiful things about being human is compassion, is love. And empathy comes from compassion and love. The ability for us to love those we have never met before, the ability to feel compassion for our fellow men, you know, and I think that's wonderful. So, yeah, it is hard. Grief is not fun, but at the same time, grief can be beautiful, because what it means is that as a society, we care.
Hmm.
If we didn't care, we'd be indifferent, and that is much, much more ugly.
When I was doing my research for this topic, I came across a number of articles, and this was mainly in the US. You know, people were talking about a grief crisis looming upon the United States, because there the death toll is, you know, far into the millions. But looking at Malaysia and where we're at now, I mean, is it sort of a fair statement to say that we might perhaps have a grief crisis looming upon us, or do you think that's just, do you think that's not a very suitable word to use?
I think that's not a very suitable word to use. And I'm going to be, I mean, I'm a little bit biased, but I'm going to actually say that the reason why I think that's not a suitable way of losing is because we are a collectivistic culture.
Mm-hmm.
And we do empathize a lot more than, and we come together a lot more as societies. So I think that America this is one of the negative sides of being individualistic. When you are experiencing your grief, you are grieving alone. You're not sharing. You're cut off. And it's kind of why counseling and mental health has grown so much, because, you know, all this individualistic culture means that we don't have, you know, family support. We don't have support or active support or enough support from society so we need to go to strangers. And it's good for my industry, but for human being, when we have got a society and our society, when we have compassion to each other, when we are there for each other, I think we may be able to avoid it going into a crisis. I can't say 100%, but I'm hopeful. I have a very positive view of Asian values. And I think that as a collectivistic culture, we do come together, we do support each other, and we try our best. And we try our best to help people when they are in pain. And so, yeah, I think that we can avoid it, but not because of numbers of death or what. No, I think it's because we do reach out, and we have got structures for reaching out. And sometimes if our parents are not able to provide the support, uncles or aunties can step in. Sometimes friends step in, and we do step in, and we do barge in. And yeah, there are pros and cons.
Mm.
So yeah, this one is seriously my opinion. I'm hoping my opinion is correct. Maybe it's a hopeful opinion. I could be wrong. I'm not. But I am going to say that I think that I love the way we came together during all our crises, MH370, MH17, you know, the way Malaysians came together, we really did stand together at that point in time. I was there. I was at the crisis sites doing crisis counseling, and it was very comforting how we came together. Mm-hmm. And if we stand together in that way, put aside politics, put aside whatever, and just be as human, with compassion, with love, deal with our, you know, neighbors, our friends, people who are affected by it, we can avoid major crisis.
Mm. On that note, you know, as individuals, as a society, what can we do to ensure that we provide a safe space and provide support for people who are experiencing grief?
Okay, don't have an expectation that they should be okay for you. One of the things that always kind of I get so, you know, confused by and bedeviled by is when people are crying and then you go, okay, no, it's okay, don't cry, you're crying too much. Who are you to say that? Who are you to... We want people to stop crying because their tears make us uncomfortable. When we see them crying, we are uncomfortable. So actually, we're telling them to not cry because we are uncomfortable with their tears. But sometimes when people cry, you can see they're crying for too long. It's fundamentally affecting their lives. Okay, then suggest they go into counseling, get them the help that they need. Mm-hmm. But it is during a funeral, during a crisis point, they want to cry. Respect their crying. You don't know what to say. Okay, and that is one of the saddest things is we don't know what to say to people. So we say, mm-hmm. it's going to be okay. Somebody just died. Your mom just died. Your kid just died. It's not going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Don't use platitudes. Do not use platitudes during funerals. It doesn't help. It makes things a lot worse because people know you're just saying things to fill the silence. Mm-hmm. That's what a platitude is. So what do you do instead? Go there, say, my deepest condolences. Don't say anything else. Or you can say, I'm here. My deepest condolences, I am here. Give presence. Trust that you being there for that person is all they need. Just go into, you don't have to say anything. You just have to be there for them and let them, you know, go through that crisis period without expectations, without needing to stop crying because it's making everybody else feel upset. You know, your crying is making other people upset. And those kinds of words have got no place in a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of words have got no place during a crisis. But people say it all the time. Because they think they're helping. They're not. So one of the major things is if you don't know what to say, just say, I am so sorry you had to go through this. I'm here if you need me. That's one. The other one is this question that, you know, we always ask people. Are you okay? How are you? Are you fine? We all want the answer, I'm fine, I'm okay. If you really want to help, ask specific questions. So you're going to go there, you see somebody in grief, you sure you know that something is wrong. And then you go and ask them, are you okay? Then they go, yes, I'm fine. And then, oh, the person doesn't want help. No, you approach it this way. Mm-hmm. Because we are used to answering the question, are you okay with I'm fine?
It's automatic.
So instead ask this question. When was the last time you have eaten? When was the last time you slept? Do you need a break? Do you need to go and have a bath? I can look after things while you have a shower. You know,
mm-hmm.
do you need that little bit? Ask specific questions of what is needed at that point in time. I remember once I had a friend whose family member passed away under very non-expected circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And when we found out, it was already like 2 o'clock in the evening and the person had passed away the night before. And when we went there, we asked, the few of us were there, and we asked the person, I said, when was the last time you ate? And they couldn't remember. They couldn't remember when they'd eaten, when they'd drunk. They had the whole family around them. We were friends. So I asked, when was the last time you ate? When was the last time you had a drink? And they literally could not remember because they hadn't. They hadn't had a drink. They hadn't eaten since, you know, the family member had to go to hospital. So immediately we got them, went and got some food. And then the person said, can you eat with us? Can you eat together? And my group of friends are mixed. We're all mixed, mixed religions, mixed race. And among our friends, we had one of them who was a Malay. And, you know, we all ate and we ate together. Then after that, she said she was actually fasting. But it's okay. She broke the fast because that was more important. Then she made up for it later. But you see, that's why I say as Malaysians, sometimes when we come together in a very amazing way as human beings when we approach with compassion. So when you find out what people need, ask specific questions. Look for specific things to do and respond to what, you know, respond to that during funeral and crisis points. So that'd be something I would say that we can do during the crisis point. Overall, just be compassionate and don't judge.
I think that's a wonderful point to end on, Dr. Anasuya. Thank you so much for joining me and sharing your thoughts today.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Dr. Anasuya Jagadevi-Jagathesan, a licensed and registered counsellor, as well as an associate professor at a psychology department at a local private university. And we've been talking today about grief, why it's important for people who are grieving to acknowledge it in ways that people can cope with those emotions, and how we can help support people who are grieving. If you need emotional support or just want to talk to someone anonymously, you can call Befrienders KL at 03-7627-2929. If you missed any part of today's show or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can download the podcast on bfm.my or on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.